Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pony Development Sync call for January the 4th in the year 2022. Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Joe McElvain. If those others on the call would like to say their names so that people listening along to the recording later can put a name to the voice, now is a good time for that.
Hi, I'm Sean Allen.
Hi, I'm Borja.
Hi, I'm Red.
Great. So we have a rather short auto-generated agenda for our meeting today. We'll begin with a pull request in the Pony C repo, number 3953, entitled Work in Progress, Ban Unstable Variables. I have not seen this yet. This is from 4 days ago. It looks like this is some work from Jason, trying to come up with a fix for issue ticket 3931, entitled Ephemeral RefCap Should Not Be Assignable a RefCap Type. So this is an example, let's see. Yeah, where somebody declared, and in this case, Red, I suppose, declared a local variable with an ephemeral reference capability on it, which is not supposed to happen, but the compiler allowed it and did strange things later on. It just ephemeral in general means that it's not attached to any stable name. And this is an example where the compiler allowed you to declare a stable name with an ephemeral capability, which is kind of a contradiction in terms. And so I think Jason is working on a fix for this, which seems to, I have not looked into it yet, but it looks like it's a little bit more involved than I was expecting or hoping, but not too huge. With Jason not here, there's probably not much we can discuss here unless anybody has any thoughts they want to raise about this. Okay. If that's the case, I'm going to skip over. Go ahead.
Do you know what the currently this is more aggressive than can support certain generic use cases means?
Currently, this is more aggressive than can support certain generic use cases, particularly when instantiated with unions. For example, array.init can be called with none to initialize an array whose generic parameter is t_iso or none, even though it would cause the constructor parameter to be t_iso ephemeral or none val. Okay. When he says currently this is more aggressive than it can support generic use cases, it means the approach that he has going right now is going to disallow some things that would be safe. And in particular, the example given where array init can be called with none. It can be called with either the T itself or none. And it seems like, let's see, array init is a strange one because array init has an ephemeral, array init has an ephemeral argument. Okay. Which is somewhat of a strange thing to have. I forget why array init has an ephemeral argument.
Because it might be coming from like an ISO that you consume, I believe, right? Yes.
But most of the time, if you want to pass an ISO into something, you pass it in as the, you know, you consume it, it makes an ISO ephemeral,
right, right,
and then the parameter is an ISO.
But this is a generic. So I'm not taking an ISO, I want a consumed ISO, right? Yes, no, no, oh wait, no. No,
I think I remember why this is ephemeral now. It's it's to make this impossible to use with ISO or TRAN.
Okay.
Because if you look down at line 116, you may not be in it, but
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah. So there's a while loop where array init basically makes
that would be very bad copies, to use, right? With an ISO. Yeah, that would be very bad.
Yeah.
Right.
And yeah, so yeah, it's like it intentionally creating an impossible situation for ISO and TRAN, but it is possible for those that are freely aliasable. And it looks like in the work that Jason was doing, he was trying to, you know, use an intermediate type parameter like we've used in some other places to guarantee that it's aliasable. Because this is kind of a weird way to guarantee this. I'll have to ask Jason later about why that didn't work. But what he tried to do here was introduce a new type parameter B that is, it looks like he did that in a way that doesn't match what I would expect. So I can't comment too much on this, but it is a weird way to guarantee that A is aliasable. And I think it would be better to have a type parameter constraint using a second parameter B that proves that A is aliasable, rather than having this like impossible type for ISO or TRAN.
Thank you. You explained the comment part that I was just like, I don't understand what this comment is. the more aggressive in certain cases. Got it. Yeah. Yeah. I was fixated on the none and not on the init taking a ephemeral.
Yes.
Which explains why, because I started from an incorrect place where I couldn't figure out what on earth he meant.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, it seems like, yeah, it would be say like if you have an array whose parameter, whose type parameter is ISO or none, or, you know, the thing you want ISO or none. It would be safe to fill it with none. And that's actually kind of a common thing to want to do, probably, if you have such an array that you want to access freely without violating the bounds of the size. And so, yeah, I think we'll just have to wait and discuss this more with Jason about the limitations he's running into. Okay, so the other... I'm going to skip over issue 3952 for a moment, because I know, Sean, you said you wanted to discuss that kind of in detail, and there's only one other ticket to discuss here, so I thought we could discuss that other one first. So in the Pony Up repo, ticket 86, show command timeout doesn't work. This is a ticket from about a year ago. 2 years ago. I forgot about the new year. Let's see, 13 days ago, GitHub user Pimetris says, I have the same behavior on Linux. Pony up show is hanging for 2 minutes, 10 seconds before timing out. Here's the S trace output in case it helps. The problem is not limited to the show command. Timeouts, from what I've looked at the source, the timeout seems to be set only for the show command. Writing down the link line takes less than 1 second, but then it hangs. Seems more like client server are not closing correctly the TCP section, as the OP pointed out.
There seems to be two issues really with this, probably. The most important one right now and the easiest to address that somebody would be able to do is that it appears the timeouts are not actually being correctly set in all cases where they should be, so that it would end and it just hangs. There also seems to be something related to a very small number of people's network connections, which is causing some other unknown bug entirely, which causes the timeout to be required because we're not actually, we're probably not getting the results back in a way they're expected, if we're getting any at all. And then the timeout should fire and close it, basically saying, hey, that didn't work, but that's not happening. The getting the timeout to fire would be reasonably fixable if we had, if somebody could either go through and examine and go, oh, this looks like this isn't being correctly set up here, but there's no way to test it without, I mean, you could probably connect to NC or something in order to just leave the connection open. But the actual, whatever the underlying thing is that a couple folks have said that they have, which is like two people now, for something deeper, I don't know what that would be or how to debug it without actually having that problem. I do know that for, I think it was Superhero Int J was his GitHub name. It was reproducible every single time from his machine. But
I, you know. Sean, you know a lot about the TCP in Pony. I recently was troubleshooting an issue with the Pony runtime, but not using the Pony standard library with the TCP. And I found that it was on machines where IPv4 and IPv6 were both working for the connection I was trying to make. You know, we make the so-called like happy eyeballs algorithm. Mm-hmm. We try both connections at once. And if they, you know, we take whichever one succeeds first is the goal. In my buggy code using the Pony runtime, so this is not a bug in the Pony runtime, but in my buggy code that was using the Pony runtime, I was like failing to account for an edge case of that second connection. And actually mine was hanging open on the server side. The server second connection was not getting closed correctly. But is it possible that this is related to an IPv4, IPv6 kind of maybe a race condition with that?
It's possible that there could be a bug in the happy eyeballs stuff in the TCP.
Because yeah, that code is like super subtle. Like the code that we have to handle the ASIO events and like which ones we take ownership of.
Yeah, it's definitely subtle. I've accidentally, when I re-implemented it for Lori, introduced a bug there, right? But it was a bug which was fairly easily reproducible in the right scenario, right? This one has come up. So whatever is happening with this is so incredibly rare that if it is a bug, it is a ridiculously subtle bug. And the problem is going to be finding somebody who wants to fix it and can reproduce it all the time.
Yeah.
I have seen this, but it was only for a short period of time. So, and that was on a machine where I had IPv6 configured, but my ISP's IPv6 was broken. So it, and so when, and the problem went away when I disabled IPv6 on my machine. I may be able to reproduce this. I can't promise, but I may be able to get back to the state where it was broken for me. So let me see if I can do that.
Okay.
When you say you saw it, you mean you saw it with Corral or you saw it with different kinds of TCP?
I saw, but it was actually both with Pony Up and actually with...
Pony Up, yeah.
Yeah, with Pony Up and also with Firefox when using some IPv6 CDNs. Sometimes it would just fail.
And in the particular case of this, it Pony Up, it is very specifically whatever the CDN that CloudSmith is running on top of. So if it only happened with certain CDNs, that could further narrow it down to why it wouldn't be seen all that often.
Facebook CDN was the one where I would see it more than anywhere else. But I will, if I can reproduce this, I can certainly dig some. But yeah, the CDN thing may be a thing here.
Very well be.
Okay. I'm marking this down in a comment that Red is going to try to reproduce.
Why is static electricity always like go zap so much more when you touch a computer for your discharge? What is that? Ow.
Good path to ground.
I guess. Oh my god. Ow. My finger actually went numb from that static discharge for a moment. I'm going to touch something else before I touch the computer again. Okay.
I tend to hit things with my hand because the pain from hitting something is far less than the static for me. So I'll like walk and I will hit something metal with my hand because that will hurt less. There you go. Things you didn't need to know about me, part three.
I have a habit of sliding my feet across the carpeted floor downstairs and then touching the all aluminum sliding glass door. And that's usually quite a discharge.
Oh, that's freaking me out just thinking about it. Ah.
Okay, so I've added a comment about what we discussed, kind of summarizing things. And now we can move on to In the Pony C Repo, issue ticket 3952, which is entitled Segfault in Compiler when Matching on Capabilities via Generics. And just to kind of give a basic overview of what's going on here. As many of you know, the capability information about capabilities does not exist at runtime, or at least not for, well, I don't want to confuse the point too much there, but there are a few ways in which it does exist, but it is not possible to differentiate at runtime, say a string ref and a string val, for example. So a match expression in Pony is limited in that it cannot, if you're trying to match by string val or string ref, what it really is just looking at is to see if it's a string. And so in the compiler, we need to prevent and we do prevent in most cases somebody trying to do a match that would check for where they're trying to match, say, a string val, but there's a possibility that that the real object is a string of some other capability. Because if we did not prevent this, we allowed them to create a match expression with a string val on one side, and then we treated it within the match body as a string val. And then at runtime, it was actually a string ref or a string ISO or something else that was not a val. Then we would be like implicitly in the type system, like casting it to a val. That's obviously not safe because there could exist some other reference there that could be mutated. And we haven't actually proved it's a val in the match statement, like we thought we did, right? So that's why it's prevented. And if you try to do such a match in Pony code, what you'll usually see is an error message, a compiler error that says this match would violate capabilities. And I think that's the text. I think it's the text that the compiler error uses. So in this case, we have a certain class of examples where using generics and type parameters can circumvent the compiler check that is supposed to prevent matching on capabilities. And basically it allows the code to elude this check. And in this case, it gets all the way to code gen. So it passed through all the safety checks of the compiler. It gets all the way to code gen and it happens to crash with a seg fault because something wasn't as expected in code gen. But if this had managed to make it past code gen without hitting whatever that kind of issue is, which is not really the important issue because it's an invalid input anyway. But if it had somehow managed to get past that, then it would have generated an unsafe program that would violate capabilities. And so we need some way to prevent, well, basically what I wrote in my comment in the last sync call was that there's kind of two paths forward as I see it. Actually, Jason added a couple of days ago some other paths that he wanted to mention, but the two paths that I mentioned in my comment were, we could either make it possible to actually check capabilities at runtime, and that would mean encoding information about capabilities into object pointers, probably using the spare bits inside the pointer with some bit hacks. That's something that we have discussed with Sylvan in the past on a prior sync call, although obviously we decided not to do that at that time. So that would be one path, is make it so that we can successfully match by capability at runtime so that we can actually allow this code, or we need to find a way to disallow the code. Now there is a kind of short-term hack that we could use to disallow this code so that we're disallowing the specific instantiation of the generic. Right, because what's going on here is we have a generic type that under normal use works fine, but if you choose just the right, or I guess depending on your perspective, just the wrong, if you choose just the wrong type parameters to put in, then it will create an unsafe match. And Pony generics are designed to be type checked in such a way that if the generic type passes all of its checks, then it's safe to instantiate with any type argument that meets the constraints of the type parameter, or type parameters, plural. So in the short term, we could just prevent unsafe programs by not upholding that property for generics and saying, okay, we're going to implicitly realize that there's a bug here and say this match violates capabilities. So even though the generic type passed type checking successfully, this particular instantiation of it would generate an error, which is not great, because then somebody could write a library that fails to compile in certain cases, even though the general one compiled. The other option, for maybe a longer term option, would be to try to add disjointness constraints to the language so that the disjointness of the type parameter for matching reasons could be communicated as a type constraint. And that would allow somebody to write a generic that would prevent being instantiated in a bad way and could be proved safe in isolation.
So I think I thank you for that explanation, which is a little bit different than what you wrote before. And I think I understand. So the disjointness would be required in order to be able to say A and B cannot be of the same type, right?
Yeah. You would be saying that, like, if I try to match between A and B, I'll never have something that is both A and B at the same time.
A and B can be the same type, but that means they have to have the same capabilities. Well, no, because even that would be weird, because it would be, I'm matching if A is string val and B is string,
like, right? Any
and
vowel.
B is string val, and you have two different ones, even if it's just if match string. Yeah.
So that you're right, that it would not violate capabilities, like if you instantiated them with the same capability. So like you could have something more than just a disjointness, or rather more specific than a disjointness constraint. You could say this, that A either has to be disjoint from B, or it needs to have the same capability as B. That's kind of a mouthful to think about and to write. But that is one version that would be safe with capabilities.
But still potentially weird and bumpy.
Right. Yeah. It could give behavior that you don't want in your program. But it's the kind of thing you can already do, right? Like I could have a string val or any val, and I could if I match on the any vowel first, then I'm going to get it 100% of the time on that branch, and the other one becomes unreachable. Like the, you know, the string case.
And vice versa.
Because of the order of match branches.
Yep. And I mean, you could do the same thing with if type as well. You could do the same thing with if type at compile time with a generic as well, right? Where you might not, as the library writer, have intended necessarily what's going to happen, just because it's a weird edge case that most people probably don't think about. I take two things. I'm saying if A is blah, and I, for some reason, I say if B is something else, that then these two different things. And
yeah, and you're hitting on the reasons why it would kind of, even apart from this this bug with capabilities, apart from that, it would still be nice to have a constraint language that we could actually, you know, use to express disjointness. Because right now, like, if, for example, if you look at the internal implementation of map, I think is one that does it. Map uses, like, instead of using none, because you could actually have values of type none, it uses like little primitives that it created just as marker types that are private, because it doesn't want you to instantiate a map of type where the value is of type one of those primitives. And so, like, that kind of is a workaround that I've sometimes seen in Pony Code as a way of achieving disjointness effectively. Although you still have to be careful, I think, about the order, right? Because an interface like any could match even your private primitive. So even in that case, like, you still have to be careful about the order of matching. And just creating a disjointness constraint. Well, I guess that would disallow you from if you were to use a disjointed constraint within the implementation map, and somebody tried to create a map where the value is what was of type any, they would get that, you know, the disjointed constraint would say, no, you can't do that. Whereas perhaps that is a desirable thing to be able to create. And so maybe you wouldn't actually want to use a disjointness constraint there. You'd want to continue doing the subtle kind of slightly error prone order based like the order dependent matching, right? That it's doing right now. It works, like, it's not buggy as long as you remember to match in the right order. But if you forget to match in the right order, then it's buggy. But if you actually introduce a disjointness constraint, that arguably disallows some useful kinds of maps. So kind of like walking back that thought and thinking maybe it's not such a great example, and maybe the general case is not a great example either. I'm not sure.
I understand. Thank you, because yes, I understand what you meant though with the disjointness and everything now. And I wasn't really following from when I read it what you were thinking there. Well, this is actually the more you think about it, the more subtle and tricky it gets.
Yes.
fun. So yeah.
I mean, if we wanted to allow the most pony programs, right, we would allow matching on capabilities, and we'd do the extra runtime stuff needed to encode it in the pointers, and then you could allow more programs than you otherwise would.
I think that has that is a very deep and long conversation to get right as well, because because that has the possibility to break a vast number of use cases that people would want to do if we don't get it right.
That is a big conversation of itself.
Because, like, I think 99% of the time, I don't care what the capability was on that thing, right? I just, it's a string. Good. You know, and I took a box, and it could be a ref. It could be a val. I don't really care at this point, but yeah. Okay, fun. Thank you.
I see some others have arrived that I did not notice arrive, but including Jason. Jason, did you have thoughts you wanted to share on this? I know you added some more.
You hit the nail on the head on everything there between like the two different ways to do disjointness. Like the I was originally like very strongly in favor of disjointness for the exact reason you mentioned, because of that, like what you mentioned with you have to match first on the you want to avoid like that behavior where you have to first match on the primitives that you know about, and then you have to match on the other parts, because that's kind of a weird thing to have to do and manage. But then it's exactly like if you have disjointness meaning like not having that weird capability behavior, that's exactly when you have to have private constraints or private types appear in disjointness constraints. I think if you say that disjointness has the weird capability dependent behavior, so saying like either they don't mention the same constructors, or when they do mention the same constructors, then the capabilities match up. I think if you say disjointness has that meaning, then you actually can not mention private constraint or private types in the constraints. I think that one actually is safe to do at that point. So that's just like a note. Obviously, that's just not like a proof or anything. But
and you're talking about just for the capability soundness, right?
Yeah, but at the same time, then like once you do that, the once you've done this sort of like weirdness, once you've done this like capability dependent disjointness constraint, then you've lost one of the compelling use cases for disjointness constraints, which was making avoiding the dealing with like the confusing magic cases.
Yeah, well, and the other thing I was saying is that like as I was talking about it, I was realizing that like let's say that we did have a great disjointness system, right? And then so now we could take, you know, map, for example, and exactly. say that it's disjoint from these two private primitive marker types. But if you do that, now it actually disallows some useful maps. Like, for example, I think that people use this a lot. You could have a map where the
value is any tag. I did hear you when I was hearing that conversation.
Yeah. Like, it's having
you could any allow tag that value any is tag like super useful. Fine. Any tag could be fine. You might well, have
it's fine for it's fine for capabilities, but it's not fine for order of matching.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, this other use case for preferring to have disjointness constraints available actually could be less useful than I originally anticipated for generics.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if like one of the solutions is if we can just like enforce. We sort of already do this with terrible error messages, but enforcing the always match first on a concrete type as part of a generic rule. And maybe if we just banish, if we just ban this weird class by saying you can't match on a generic class, you have to match on a concrete interface or type or something. Hmm. That would bar this first class, and that would mean that the first thing that people have to match on is always types first, and it just says that the last thing you match on, you can match on a generic if it's the last thing in your match case, then that's fine.
That's an interesting approach.
I'm waiting for somebody to come up with the
it might make things awkward. I'm trying to think of the cases, right? I'm trying to think through like examples of this that like.
And I did think of this before. So like my example in the, I'm not saying this is great because like my code example there is still really awkward in some respects because the semantics, the generic semantics are not right. Like it's not a capability respecting match. So if you look at that worst class there, when it's instantiated with string ref, it turns into a match on capabilities that's resolved at compile time instead of runtime. And that actually will compile successfully, and it will take the second branch.
Yeah.
That's wonky. That's not really right. but I'm not sure if it's avoidable.
Wait, so it takes the second...
It takes the Else branch.
How? How does it do that?
It just...
Wait, what? No.
Yep.
No.
That doesn't make any sense.
I don't... Wait. Wait, with the example as it's written or no?
With the example as it's written, it takes the else branch.
You're talking about where you wrote class worse that has T and you take string or T and you match on string vowel and somehow the type, when it checks the type identifier for on the object and sees it's a string, it doesn't go with that branch?
Nope, it takes the else branch. I think it gets resolved, but I don't know how exactly, so
this crashes during compilation for me. I thought you said that it did this at
it doesn't crash at all. It just compiles.
I get a seg fault on
not the first code, the code later in the issue near the bottom.
Okay.
If you look up class worse.
Okay, hold on. Wait.
So you're thinking...
Oh, class worse.
You're thinking it gets resolved at compile time and turned into like a compile time match instead of a runtime match?
Yeah, it turns into like an if type or something. I don't know exactly why. It just takes the else branch. Now, that is a sound... Like, it's not a correct compilation of the generics because it's not the same thing as if you monomorphize. But it doesn't create any unsafety.
Yeah, right.
It's something that is explainable. It's safe. It's unexpected, and it is explainable to the user.
Huh?
But it's not explainable to me.
Yeah.
Like knowing how all this is supposed to work, like I'm expecting the wart, and the wart's not there. So what's going on? That's worse. Yeah.
An interesting edge case that was not considered during some development. And maybe we want to attest.
Yeah. And if you do flip that match to try to match on T, you'll get the terrible error of like, could not match on capabilities error, basically. Just. It floods your screen with like four lines of it. It's really kind of awful to read.
I feel like Jason, on that example, you say in a comment that you could replace it with string ISO. I can't get it to work with.
You have to consume.
ISO. No, but I mean that. If you
yeah, or ISO, not the generic too. Just like you could also pass in a string ISO argument, and I meant that as an example because it literally is also something which is literally string val, like is a subtype of string val, and is also a subtype of string ref, and still goes to the string ref case. I think it actually goes to the string val case if I remember correctly.
So what I'm thinking here is string val. What I'm thinking here is that, for example, if you use string ISO as T, it doesn't take the else branch. It matches on the string val. So we have, at runtime, we know if the reference is, so we know if something is sendable or not, because we need to trace it. So maybe it's actually a runtime match using that information? I don't know.
No. So it's never going to be
a compile time match.
Just try a couple. There's a lot of variations.
The code gen for match is, it must be doing some, I've noticed that there's a lot of the code gen in the Pony compiler is sort of like paranoid or pessimistic about LLVM not doing optimizations that it should be able to do. So like, it's like doing... It's doing optimizations prior to the LLVM IR, or like it's generating optimized LLVM IR and like trying to take shortcut paths where it can to, I guess, avoid LLVM having to avoid leading it to chance that LLVM might not be able to do this. And so I wouldn't be surprised to learn that there's some logic when we're generating the LLM IR for a match that if it can tell statically what the match result is, it will go straight to that branch.
Oh, that makes sense. And so that's why we also don't hit a problem in code gen either, because it might be skipping that code gen piece by checking some.
Yeah, I think it's skipping the runtime match entirely in this case. That's the only way I can explain this behavior.
Yeah. So this might not be any sort of solution.
I'm at a loss on what the best path is on this one, other than saying like, if we don't have other major problems with adding capabilities to the pointers, like the path one approach that I wrote in my comment of like making it possible to match on capabilities at runtime, that could be a good approach in the sense that it allows a lot of allows a lot more programs to be expressed safely.
Yeah, I think that's just going to introduce a lot of bugs though.
Yeah, I'm not super confident about that path. That's why I kind of prefaced it with like if we knew that was going to work well, and I'm not sure that we do. I know that Jason, you and I have talked about kind of going the opposite direction possibly and like making capabilities less part of the type system, which is another, it's just like, it's completely the opposite direction. So yeah, I don't think we'll necessarily arrive at any good answers to this, but I'm at a loss right now.
Yeah, it's rough. Yeah, the only other one, number three on there was just some restriction on capabilities when we know we don't have disjointness necessarily, that is trying to require some capability overlap so that you can have safety when you have them in a match together. So in this case, it's like forcing T to always be Val just because it could overlap with string. I don't know that we're going to think about all the consequences for that right now.
Yeah. There's still a lot of like undesirable, I don't know.
Definitely.
I mean, yeah, like I think the one I gave, the example I gave earlier, like if we had a map, like people do this fairly often, right? Like you want to track actors in a program. You could have like a map where the key is a string and the value is an any tag, right? So you can have named actors in a program. Cool. If we had a disjointness constraint on the value of a map, then we, with anything, right? Any of these primitive markers, or whether they're public or private or whatever, like you're now preventing that useful program from being expressible. And even if you were restricting by capability, the primitive is a val, and the value you want is a tag. And if you needed them to have overlap, those don't have overlap. And so again, it's like a really useful kind of example that's disallowed.
Yeah, I think we can make that. I think that can be pretty permissive still.
For as long case. As we enforce Persiv- the order?
Possibly with the order, but my thought is that with any and the like, they have capabilities that are attached. So like with the interfaces, they're in some sense a lot safer than with unions because they have a single capability that applies to everything. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So like with an any tag, it already has an upper bound on its capability. So nothing you do with that can ever create unsafety. And so I think like you can't create unsafe matches with that. So it's possible that you can have like weaker constraints as far as how much you can pull out of an any match. You don't get any of the other compelling use cases as far as matches go, but maybe there's a minimal distraintness constraint that's just enough for safety at compile time. And ideally that might mean that it only needs to mention public types, which would be fantastic. And then, or potentially like only capabilities or something like that, or some very small set of things that can either be like inferred or inferred for some like private types or something to that effect.
I don't get the hang up on wanting it to only mention public types and not mention private types. Like, can you explain why it's undesirable to mention private types in the distributed constraint?
I think it just makes for large constraints, and private types ideally should just, that since they literally can't be named and their details aren't known, they shouldn't appear in public interfaces because they literally just don't exist effectively. It's like,
well, they do exist though. Like, they're just not like, I can return, I can have a function that accepts private types in its argument. I can have a public function that accepts private types in its arguments and returns a private type in its return value. And that's like, it's like perfectly valid. You have to get those private types from something that was capable of producing them. Right. And actually we use this within, I think, like object capabilities. I think we use that where like we're relying on, it's okay for you to handle a value that has that that private type, but you can't name, you can't like explicitly type it or name it. It has to like be subsumed into a public interface if you want to have a named thing for it.
What are you referring to, Joe?
Which part?
You said, I think we're doing this with object capabilities.
Let me see if I can find an example. I could be wrong.
I asked because you said that and I was like, I don't think we're doing that. Are we? I mean, it's entirely possible that we are somewhere and I just forgot about it. But
yeah, it's also possible that we're not, and I did it, you know, I said the wrong thing here. I'm just briefly looking through file capabilities because I think that's probably where it would be. Yeah, let's see. I am not finding an example right now. It could be that there is no example, but anyway, it is possible to write such an API in Pony today, but I'm not sure that we actually are. Could just be something that I thought about and did not do.
Maybe I didn't understand. I didn't think that private types were nameable at all.
Well, they are, like, so. What I mean, they're not nameable by, so if you have any type signatures on your if you have any type signatures in this other package, right, the type signatures cannot name any of those private types, but you could have a call site in this separate package, right, that receives a return value that has a private type. Wait, did we use this in the HTTP library? The HTTP library is returning it as a public interface that's like restricted. Okay, so that's not an example of this, but yeah, you can have a function that returns a private type from where the private type is defined in its own package where the function's defined. And that function can be called by a call site in another package. And it's now holding a value of that private type. And that could be passed into another function that accepts that private type as an argument, right? So you could get it as a return value from one function, pass it into another function, all without naming what type it is. And you can't name what type it is from that separate package. So it is possible to deal with them. And if you need to name it, you have to give it a matching interface that is not private in order to deal with it.
That's strange, but I would consider that to be an avoid, something I would want to avoid, but I'm not going to get into that.
I think there are a lot of negatives to something like that. I would avoid it as well. But well, this was a very informative meeting for me. Thank you.
Still kind of freaked out that match took the second path. That was totally unexpected to me, because that's not how it would behave at runtime, but it must be getting optimized away at compile time.
Can you open a separate issue for that, Jason, so that we can add a test specifically for that case and make sure that we lock it down? Whatever happens with anything else, there's something in there which is just no. Some optimization or something is bad.
And yeah, I optimization would be unreachable if we prevented the capability unsafety.
Yeah.
Because so it's like if that optimization weren't there, Jason's code would do an unsafe thing at runtime. I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't create the ticket, but yeah.
It's not even like, sure what to call the ticket.
Yeah. It's like we have unsafe code that's allowing to get to CodeGen. CodeGen would normally generate an unsafe program, but instead the optimization causes it to accidentally generate a safe program.
Yeah, which does something which is, it's like correct, it's only wrong. It's like surprising when you know how the compiler works, but it's sort of correct, just surprising that it works at all. You'd expect the compiler to say no, but it says yes, and here you go.
I'm not even sure, Joe, that it would create an unsafe code. I don't know that for sure. I have no idea how this is happening.
Code was accepted, then yeah, this would mutate a val. If it took the first branch, it would mutate a val in another actor.
I have no idea how it got to the point of where.
You're not supposed to get. You're supposed to get a compiler error that says this match would violate capabilities.
I feel like this is worthy of a, hey, this compiles. It shouldn't compile. Let's look into it, because it might not be the same thing. Just because it looks in the same area doesn't mean that it's the same thing, and I wouldn't want it to get lost.
Okay.
To make sure that it doesn't pass. That this should be a compiler error. The fact that it happens to compile is just slightly more scary to me than the fact that it doesn't segfault the compiler. But that it doesn't get an error in the end is my concern. And my worry is that we can fix a whole bunch of other stuff, and then somehow there's something lurking in there that this still would manage to get through somehow.
Okay, we're a little bit over time. Anything else people want to squeeze in before we sign off? All right, thanks everyone, to those who attended and those listening along to the recording later. Thanks, we'll see you next week.